Yeah, get your motor running, baby. I got to talk like this, Mitch. I really do. It's Bill. It's Wendy. And it's WGN Radio. And we're going to hear a voice right now that many of us have listened to for years and years. Mitch Michaels.
I don't talk like that. What are you talking about?
My famous story of Mitch. First of all, I don't know if you remember that we met at the Loop Radio station.
Sweetheart, you used to come in and relieve me. And I mean that in the sense of you were on the air after
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I'm not in the book about that.
No,
people.
No. She is in the book, folks. But you would come in at 11 o'clock and on Saturday nights. You had the purple swatch in the hair, or was it?
It was pink, and I think it was Sunday night, but that's okay.
No,
it was,
I only worked like 2 to 7 on Sunday. Maybe you came in then, but I thought it was Saturday nights.
You didn't do the Dr. Demento 6 to midnight?
No.
Because this was 1986, and I met you and had grown up listening to you on a lot of radio stations. And then we met again at CD 94.7
right.
on the weekend.
Right.
And my favorite story about you, Mitch, is I would listen to you and I would chat, and we got along, and everything was great, and talked about old times in radio. And then he would go, "All right, well, I'm getting out of here. Wendy Schneider's coming up next." And I went a few weeks and let you say that, and then I go, "Mitch, it's Snyder, not Schneider." And you looked at me very blankly and you said, "That's what I'm saying. Wendy Schneider."
Wendy Schneider, yeah. What's your problem over here? That's just my South Side Chicago thing, even though I never lived on the South Side. It's like,
So did you purposely, because everybody did that kind of version of your voice, but did you change your voice to be on the radio?
You know, I don't think so. I mean, Dahl used to make so much fun of me.
Steve Dahl, yeah.
"Oh, yeah, Joe DeCruz, all that kind of," it was all that. In fact, the last time I was on the radio with you was with you and Buzz and Steve. Probably 2003, I think.
Yes.
And he, you know, he brought me back just to do the Friday thing that I used to do.
And what was the Friday thing?
Well, there was, I stole that from WMMS in Cleveland. I used to use Murray Saul. This guy was a legend in Cleveland. And every Friday at 6 o'clock, he would come in and do a live, probably 10-minute diatribe, and it was like, "We gotta get out of here. We gotta throw the yokes off the bus," you know. And then he finish it up with, "We got to get this fry," you know. Just, you know, this guy was he got so into it a couple times he actually threw up.
God, the early days of radio.
But it was, you know, and then they'd play "Born to Run" and a bootleg version of "Friday on My Mind" by a band called Earthquake, and it was, you know, it was the weekend. It was like, you know, so
that's how you kick off the weekend, man.
You know, I would do it a little earlier, and I would, you know, do my own little diatribe and use a little bit of Murray, and it was, you know, we all assimilate things from other places and other stations and other spaces.
What was the turning point, Mitch, when radio all of a sudden said you don't have to have the radio sounding voice? A lot of people came along all of a sudden that didn't sound like radio people. What was the turning point?
The turning point was probably, I would say, in the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there were more people that you would hear on the radio and you go, "Wow, that's odd."
Yeah.
That's not what I was used to hearing. Or, you know, I don't know. You know, to give you an exact specific time frame, I don't know. But I would say 90s.
Did Wolfman Jack start the trend, or was he just one of the best at it?
You mean with the voice thing?
With that kind of a voice. Yeah.
I think he was probably certainly an early originator of circumstance and the most distinctive, anyway.
Yeah.
You know, he was, he was magical.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Was
and
he?
I mean, that's why you listened to radio. You had that, you know, friend on the radio dial that you couldn't see because that's pre-Facebook and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You could only,
they
were only represented by their voice. So if somebody just went and, "Hello, how is everyone today?" No one would be listening. There was some kind of mystique behind
Susie Sunshine. It's like, yeah. Well, that's the whole thing. You know, radio for so long was the only other place to find any information. Rock and roll radio for, you know, 15, 20 years was, and even before that with AM Top 40, but I'm just talking about FM. You know, you wanted to find out when the new Van Halen album was out. You wanted to find out when the Stones were touring. Mm-hmm. You want to find out if, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That information wasn't in the Tribune. Sorry, this is the Tribune building.
Yeah, that's fine. Right. You're fine.
This is one of the few stations that I've never worked at and never been thrown out of. So I'm trying to be careful to at least finish the interview before they ask me to leave.
But a teenage kid is going to listen to the radio before they're going to read a paper.
Well, of course.
So they want to hear information there as well.
You had Rolling Stone magazine, Cream magazine, and a few other things, the Illinois Entertainer and stuff like that. But, I mean, the radio was where it was. And that's where you'd, hey, we got the new Van Halen album. We'll play it at 3 o'clock today. Of course, the record guys would come by at 1:30 and say, "All right, you got this, but you can't play it till 3:00." They leave, and we go right in the studio and play it at like 5 to 2. What are you doing? You can't. It's like that kind of stuff.
I have read this book, not in its entirety, and I'm kind of mixing and matching, going from chapter to chapter. Mitch Michaels, it's Doing the Cruise, Memories from a Lifetime in Radio and Rock and Roll. You can go to doingthecruise.com.
Doingthecruise.com, absolutely.
Book is out today?
Yesterday, actually.
Oh, yesterday.
Yeah. Are we sold out yet, Rick?
Sold out.
Rick Kempfer's here. Ken Cirilla also writing the book with you.
Who did a fabulous job, by the way. He really did, and I have to give him a lot of credit. We spent 2 years doing this, and he'd write stuff, and I'd go, go in and change and edit and do stuff, and I'd say, dude, it's got to sound a little more like me. And then early on, he had trouble getting that. But, as we spent more time together and whatever else, he realized what a complete idiot I am. And he's really been able to transfer that into the book. So it's like, it's Mitch speak in the book. I mean, you tell me you were reading it. Don't you think it sounds
yes,
like me?
Yes, it does sound like
it. Yeah. So that's what we really wanted to achieve. And Ken did a fabulous job.
So at some point, Mitch, when a movie company reads the book and says, we have to turn this into a movie, who plays you in the movie?
Well, are we talking about the young Mitch or the Mitch of today?
Give us both versions.
Well, the Mitch of today, there's a equality, not equality, but a lookalike with Fred Dreyer.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hunter.
Ago, when I was just doing freelance stuff, I tried to get my agent, Shirley Hamilton, to send my picture to whatever the production company was and say, hey, we got a whole great set of storylines. This could be like his black sheep brother and he keeps getting him out of jail or, he's a bad disc jockey that got fired again. And we're just, it's like... It never happened. But,
so Fred Dreyer plays you
currently,
day,
yeah.
But the young Mitch Michaels.
Boy,
is played
that's any suggestions, guys? I mean,
I'm gonna chime in with Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, that's actually really good.
Yeah. Okay.
I love the cover of the book. There's you and a sea of people. Where was that taken?
That was shot August of 1979 at Navy Pier, Chicago Fest. I was doing 2 to 6 in the afternoon on the Loop, and. That place was so crazy and so much fun and so hot. Remember, Navy Pier was a two-story Quonset hut, okay? That's all it was. It had a metal roof, and it was just hollow inside, and it was so
like a
hot.
Lot of radio people.
Well, that too, yes. Do we want to name names now or at the end of the interview? We got some. There's a long list in the book, but but this place was hot. We had a booth, and it was probably about 8 feet square, and it was about 4 feet off the ground. Had a plywood railing around and a little glass railing around the top of that. And I was, by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we're doing breaks, and I'm out in the crowd. And we started broadcasting at 10 o'clock in the morning. By 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we probably had 5,000-6,000 people around the booth. And I'd just go out and do breaks in the crowd. It wasn't wireless mic; you just took
the
long cord and stuff like that. So I'm out there and I do one of these, and this photographer Bill Sosin is up in the thing, and he goes, "Hey, let's get a shot of you with And it was so funny; it was a great shot. I remembered it, and for years, I had thought that Paul Natkin, his partner, had taken it. Paul says, "No, I don't have that." A year ago, my birthday in March. Susie and my lady and I are coming back from having brunch down here, and she's looking on her phone. She goes, "Oh my, look at this. Here's a picture some guy sent you for your birthday." And Bill Sosin had posted this picture, and I'm like, "Oh My goodness, I've been looking
for
this.
Show it to Bill. This is like the best picture.
Yeah, it's.
And you, if you need to see it, listeners, you need to buy the book. That's what you need to do. You can go doingthecruise.com. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back because you are talking about naming names.
Oh, absolutely.
We will talk about that.
Wendy Schneider.
That's right, man. That's what I said. So I have to read this text in the voice. It's like, ooh, yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
Put your paycheck in your pocket.
Yeah.
Flip the boss the bird.
Yeah. Clean off the desk and get the hell out of there.
You're doing an impression of yourself. I've never seen that before.
I guess.
That's beautiful.
Just an acid flashback for me. It's like, you know, it's like.
Mitch Michaels is our guest. It's Bill and Wendy. More in a moment. WGN.
All right, Mitch Michaels is joining us, Bill and Wendy, here on 720 WGN. Listen, you really have paved the way for a lot of other DJs. You were instrumental in getting XRT off the ground.
I was there at the beginning and then went back and helped them go full time, too.
Did you think that that would work? Because it obviously did work, and it worked well. But on paper, you go, boy, I'm not positive this will work.
You know what? It was one of those things. The guy that gets no credit, and he was a very strange guy, but the guy that actually started the musical circumstance at XRT was a guy named Don Bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a very strange fellow. I believe he might have worked at DAI briefly.
Oh, yeah?
He was a California guy. He bought Midnight to Six 7 nights a week, okay? And Danny Lee, you know, gee, you're going to pay me for this, and he's going to, you know, do his own broker time and sell his own commercials. And he needed somebody. He was doing it the first couple of months by himself. And I was out of work, and he approached me and said, hey, you want to do Saturday and Sunday night? Not the most desirable time, but,
right.
You know, it was...
It's great listening audience,
well,
though.
You know, it was very cool, and obviously it was so funny because we're out in the blockhouse out there, on 4949 West Belmont, okay? And we had a room, probably about 20 by 20. There was a desk and a microphone. And you looked at the glass, and the engineer had the turntable and all the controls in the other room. So you had to take the music in there and tell him what you wanted. And,
cut
and,
number or whatever.
Exactly. And you sat in the room and did this, and when you could hear the music, obviously. But I would schlep probably 300 albums from home. We had albums there, but, I mean, it was, you know, a limited library.
Right.
And so I'd bring, you know, stuff in from home for two nights, you know. You schlep 300 albums in the back of your car and then take them home and then bring them back. And it's like, wow, this is, you know. And what happened was he got more time. He moved it to 10 o'clock. And John Platt, who'd been on GLD and then had been on DAI, had just gotten fired from DAI. And Bridges brought him in and gave him 10 to 1 Monday through Friday. And I'm looking at Bridges going, what are you doing? Well, hey, man, you know. Well, so I called Jim Davis, the program director at DAI. He had an opening. He hired me, and I went to ABC. It was like, see ya. I got to go. You know, it's like.
And then The Loop, of course, Steve Dahl and Gary Meyer doing Disco Demolition. And you were the program director at the time?
No, I actually wasn't. Jesse Bullitt was
That's right.
I became program director about 4 or 5 months later. He was a California guy. He was here from February to about late November. And it started getting real cold, and he decided he wanted to go back to San Diego.
Smart move, probably.
I guess. You know, he was a very Southern California kind of guy.
So when everybody's storming the field at Comiskey and the second game for the Detroit Tigers not happening, you got a chant started.
Well, I actually did play-by-play with Harry and Jimmy for the first game for a couple of innings, which was one of my bucket list
things
for all time. It was like, because I actually got into radio because I wanted to do sports. But there was no sports jobs, and I went, well,
not much cruising sports world.
I got some rock and roll acumen over here too, so you know it's like. The fun part about that was trying to explain to them what was going on. You know, Jimmy's going, these are not baseball fans. I said, you're right, Jimmy, but they are baseball fans and they're rock fans. I said, let's call them sports rockers, okay? You know, Jimmy still did, you know, so did that. I'm up in the suite next to the broadcast booth, and the craziness is going on the field. They've already blown up the records, and Steve and Gary and Lorelei are whisk off in the Jeep. Yep. I love you. Have a wonderful mouth. Thank you. And I'm talking about you, not Laura.
Oh, okay.
But,
you know,
but so Mike Vec comes to me and he goes, dude,
I need your help.
Get in the public address and see what you can do about getting these people off the field. So I did what we do at concerts, which was back to your seats, back to your seats. And I
Anybody listen to you?
You know what? We got a chant going. Some of the people who weren't on the field, you know, I think they were either feeling lonely because there was probably more people on the field than were off. And they wanted, hey, come on back. We're kind of lonely over. I got better seats now. What are we doing? You know? And so it was.
You killed me.
Well, here's the best part. Harry, who'd been in the bard's room, comes back up to the booth. What the hell's going on up here? You know, and he takes. We had a little momentum. By then, the damage was done. If we'd got him off the field right that moment, you know, second base was missing, home plate was missing. There was a couple of large burn marks out in center field. It was like, are you kidding me? But he, you know, he got. He started going. You know, let's get back to our season. We can play some baseball. You know, and then he starts singing, "Take Me Out to the Ball Game."
That
like,
worked.
I knew we were all done then. When that and I. Don't let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. Harry Carey, one of my all-time idols. I've you know, loved him for years. Loved him with the White Sox. Loved him with the Cubs. You know,
yeah.
So this is by no means any shot at Harry at all. It was just, you know, guys, tell him what's going on before he comes up.
Yeah,
you know, give me another Budweiser over here, and we'll get these people off the field.
Like, Mitch, in the book, you're incredibly honest about your life and about your career, and you do name names. Name a couple names. When did things get uncomfortable for you sometimes?
Well, which time? People say, yeah, where have you worked in Chicago? I say, well, I've been fired from most of the good stations in town, sometimes more than once, you know.
And still on the air now at the River.
You know, well, you know, it's funny. Steve Sanders last week on WGN TV asked me about that. And I said, yeah, I've been fired from all these different places. I said, you know what? All those guys, bye-bye. They're all gone. I'm still here. So that says something. You know what? I mean, there was a lot of guys that when I met them, I mean, third or fourth PD through a station or whatever else, I had a feeling.
Yeah.
This is the guy, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, Bill Todd at WDAI was like the fourth PD I had. And in the book, there's a great story about me doing something to him at a Christmas party. And, you know, he didn't fire me for another 6 months, which is surprising.
Yeah.
But, you know, I replaced Jesse Bullitt at the Loop. And my deal there was Radio and Records. The headline 1 week was Michaels gets Loop. The next week, Loop falls 7349. Now, you know, it's like, okay, if you're close to an explosion, you're going to get splattered, okay?
Yeah.
It wasn't my book, but perception is reality, okay? And, you know, that was a big drop. We'd had a huge book the book before, and so the next two books declined. So after three bad books, one of which wasn't mine, they decided they wanted to make a change. And I was not the picked heir to Jesse Bullitt anyway. Lee Abrams was not a fan of mine, and I wasn't a fan of his. And I say that in the book. It's like, you know, he and I had a couple of dealings that I wasn't real wild about him anyway. You know, not the most forthright guy, okay?
There are more in this book. Mitch, I wish we had more time. I do want to mention that you can find all these little radio nuggets in the book, Doing the Cruise, Memories from a Lifetime in Radio and Rock and Roll. Mitch Michaels, go to dointhecruise.com.
Yeah, baby.
I do want to mention that I read the part, again, mixing and matching, about your son Spencer and his tragic loss, and my condolences, and you wrote that beautifully.
Well, you know what? It's something that I would never wish on anybody. It's a very tragic circumstance, but I wanted to express it. And I hope that if there's parents out there that are struggling with their kids, that maybe this will help a little bit. Anyway, you know.
Thank you for being so honest about it, because I bet it will help some people. Definitely. You're doing the cruise, baby.
Yeah.
Baby. I love you. Yeah. I love you on the air. Yeah. I love you off the air. The book is fantastic.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mitch. Appreciate you coming up.
Thanks for having
us on. Talk like this just a little bit.
I can't talk like that.
No, here's, you got to kind of turn your mouth like a little bit.
I can't do it.
This is Bill. This is Bill and Wendy doing the cruise.
Doingthecruise.com. Mitch Michaels, thank you so much. We'll hear you on the river.
Thank you.
Mitch. Quick break, then some news, then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.